Okay, so for Siman Tzadik Gimel, there's really two major topics that we're going to talk. The first topic is what happens if you use a fleishik pot in order to cook milchiks. So we'll have to talk about the difference between ben yomo, if you use a ben yomo fleishik pot or an ein ben yomo fleishik pot. We'll have to talk about the different kinds of pots, if the pot is metal or cheres, etc. Then we'll talk about what happens if you use a fleishik pot cover in order to cover a milchig soup that you're cooking. Okay. So in terms of the first topic, in terms of using a fleishik pot in order to cook milchiks, there's a Gemara Avodah Zarah and Daf Ein Ham Beis Ein Vav Amud Aleph where it discusses machlokas tanaim whether you say nosan tam lefgam is asur or mutter. Practically, paskin that nosan tam lefgam is mutter. So the Gemara says, well, if nosan tam lefgam is mutter, and we hold that a pot that's an ina ben yomo, a pot that hasn't been used, well, it's a machlokas. We know, we've discussed in the past what it takes in order for a pot to become an ina ben yomo. We have two major camps. We have Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, who both hold that you need to not use this pot for one night. So if you don't use this pot until the next morning, it becomes an ina ben yomo. But according to the Ri and the Rashbam, the way that we paskin that you need 24 hours of not using this pot in order for it to become an ina ben yomo. So let's say you haven't used this pot for 24 hours. So the Gemara says, if we hold that an ein ben yomo pot is nosin tam lefgam, so what's wrong with using a treif pot as long as it's ein ben yomo? So the Gemara says, Anachanami, you're right. In theory, you could use an ein ben yomo pot because it's just nosin tam lefgam. However, we make a gezeira not to use ein ben yomo pots because we're nervous. If we allow you to start using ein ben yomo pots to cook, then you might end up using a treif pot that's a ben yomo, and that'll be a problem. So what the Baal HaTosfos and the Rush point out over there is that what comes out is an interesting idea, and that is, if I did in fact use a treif pot that's an einu ben yomo pot, so then the contents of the pot, the tafshil that I cooked in this pot, will be kosher. They'll be perfectly kosher. However, the pot itself still retains its iser. So along these lines, based on this idea, the Torah first presents, based on the sheet of the Rush, that if I used a fleishik pot in order to cook milchiks, I have to know if the pot is a ben yomo pot or if it's an ein ben yomo pot. If the pot is ben yomo, so then everything should be aser. If the pot is an ein ben yomo pot, so then the food can be mutter. Now, the Beis Yosef has a problem with the lashon of the Torah. The Torah, the way that the Torah presents the first halacha, that if I use a fleishik ben yomo pot to cook milchiks, the Torah says aser. So the Beis Yosef says, why does the Torah so assertively say that this is usher, that the tafshel is unequivocally usher, and there's no way for this tafshel to be usher? Beis Yosef says, we know from the Siman Tzadiches that when determining Nesinas Tam, there's a big machlokas Rishon, what you have to do in order to account for the Tam of Isser in a Taraivas. So we said that according to Rashi, you need to make sure that there are 60 parts of Heter against the Isser, and you also need Timas Kveil if you can get it. You need both if you can get both, according to Rashi. We said, according to the Rambam, you just have to take this to a guy to test taste it. And even if you don't have 60 parts of Heter against the Isser, you just rely on the guy from beginning to end. Timas Kfela. If you absolutely can't get hold of the guy, so then as a last resort, we allow 60 parts of Heter to be Mevatel the Isser. But then, as a middle sheet, we have the Ramban and the Rajba, and they both hold that it depends on whether there's Mamashis of Isser in your Taravis, or if there is just Tam of Isser in the Taravis. If you have Mamashis of Isser in the Taravis, then you have to make sure to have 60 parts of Heter against the Isser. If you don't have Mamashas of Isser, you just have Tam of Isser in your Taravis, then all you have to do is take it to a guy to test taste it, and if he tastes it and makes sure that he doesn't sense any Tam of Isser, then the whole thing is mutter. So the Beis Yosef says, when the Torah comes along and he tells us that if I have a fleishik pot that's a ben yomo pot and now I used it to cook milchiks, so the Torah says that that's usher. Where is the Torah coming from? Clearly the Torah is coming from the idea that it's very hard for the contents of the pot to have more volume than the walls of the pot. And so if that's the case, if the walls of the pot are ever treif, then inevitably the contents of the pot are also going to be treif. So ask the Beis Yosef, well, I don't understand though. Even if the walls of the pot do contribute a tam of Isser, tam of Basr in this case, into the milk dish that I'm cooking up in this pot, well, why don't you just have a guy test taste it? If a guy tastes it and makes sure that there's no tam of Basr in your milk of food, so then it'll be completely kosher. So that's why the Beis Yosef is not so happy with the fact that the Torah presented this as though the milchuk of food is completely and totally asr. In light of the Ramban, the Rashba, the Rambam, it should be that you can just take this tafsh. If I use the fleshuk pot, that's a ben yom pot, in order to cook milchuks, I should just be able to take this milchuk tafshel, and I should have a guy test taste it. And if he tastes tam of asr, then it's asr. If he doesn't taste tam of asr, then it should be mutter. That's what the Beis Yosef says. And so as you might expect, if you take a look at the Mechaber, at the very beginning of Siman Sadi Gimel, the Mechaber actually passes that way. The Mechaber writes that if you have a fleshuk of pot, you're not supposed to use it for milchuks. But let's say you did use it for milchuks when the fleshuk of pot was a ben yomo, usur binosin tam. What does that mean, usur binosin tam? So as the Shach explains, it's usur based on the test tasting of a kfeila. The Shach says in Sivka Nalef over there, he says, Kolomer yati menu kfeila im yesh bo tam. Just have a guy test taste it. If the guy tells you that there's tam of asr in it, then your tafshel shalchalav is going to be asr. Now, of course, we pass like the Ramah. As we know, the Ramah holds that we don't rely on going to test taste our food anymore. Okay, so that's the first point. The shita of the Torah, just to summarize, that we said that there's a difference between using a fleshuk pot that's a ben yomo versus using a fleshuk pot that's an ein ben yomo to cook milchuks. If the pot is a ben yomo, so then everything is treif. If I use a pot that's an ein ben yomo, then at least the food is going to be kosher. And then we had the kasha of the Beis Yosef in light of the Rashba and the Ramban. And the Rambam, that why can't I, if I used a fleshuk pot that's a ben yomo to cook milchiks, why can't I have a guy test? I said, and that's in fact how the Mechaber paskens. Okay, now the tour then goes on to discuss a kli cheres. Now the tour presents the shita of the Itter. The Itter himself presents two other shitas aside from his own. Now the Itter says as follows: if I have a fleishig of pot, if I have a fleishig pot, and the fleshik pot is made out of cheres. It's a pottery, it's an earthenware pot, and I just used it a couple hours ago for fleshiks. So what's the story if I use milchiks now, if I use this pot to cook milchiks? Now, the Itter says there are three positions on the matter. Now, says the Itter, if there are 60 parts, if the tafshel that I'm cooking in this fleshik pot have 60 parts against the walls of the pot, then I have the following three positions. Number one, I have the idea that the first opinion, that if I use this pot, this fleshuk pot to cook milchuks, so the tafshel is mutter, and I can now use this pot in the future to cook milchuks. That's the first shita. The second shita said, no, this kli cheres is irreparable. It's impossible to get all the tam out of a kli cheres, and therefore this pot cannot be used any longer, and the only way to deal with this pot is to break it. The third shita is the Itter's shita, is the Itter's own shita, and that is that you can now use this pot either for milchiks or for fleshiks. You can use it for whatever you want. So again, when I have a pot, an earthenware pot, it's a fleshik earthenware pot that I just used a couple hours ago to cook fleshiks in it, and now I'm using it for milchiks. So the Itter says, if I have 60 parts of tafshel against the walls of the pot or against the pot itself, if I have 60 parts of tafshel, so then I have three shitas. Number one, either the tafshel is mutter and I can use this pot in the future for milchiks, or the pot is completely treif and I'd have to throw everything out, or I can use this tafshel, I can use the pot for whatever I want. The Itter's own sheet, that I can use this pot to cook milchiks or to cook fleshiks. Now, the obvious question right away is that the Itter sets up his case that if you have 60 parts of tafshel against the pot, how do you have 60 parts of tafshel against the pot? We've already established from the Beis Yosef that that's almost impossible. Just mathematically, it's almost impossible to have the contents of the pot for standard size pots, for the contents of the pot to have more volume than the walls of the pot. So what does the Itter mean? So the Beis Yosef suggests three possibilities as to what the Itter is suggesting here. The first is that the Itter holds of the Ravid. That the Ravid holds that it's possible to estimate the amount of blios that are contained within a pot. And so therefore, the Itter allows you to estimate the amount of blios contained within a pot. Now that's actually not so pasha to suggest. We know that the Ravid himself holds that the only time that you can do that is if you're not dealing with cheres. The Ravid himself says that if you have a kli that's made out of metal, if I have a metal spoon, and I don't know how much basar is in this spoon, I can estimate how much basar is contained within this spoon. I can estimate what amount of blios are contained within this spoon. But if I'm dealing with a kli cheres, the Ravid says that it's specifically for a kli cheres that I cannot assume, and I have to, and I can't estimate the amount of bleus that are contained within this spoon, and therefore I would have to need 60 parts of heter against the entire spoon. So clearly, what the Beis Yosef must mean when he says that the iter holds of the Ravid's of the Ravid, it must mean that he holds of the Ravid's mahalach, the Ravid's principle that it's possible to estimate the amount of tam that's contained within a kli. That's the first suggestion. The second suggestion for what the iter means is that maybe the iter is talking about a case where you know exactly amount how much busser was used in this pot. In other words, everybody agrees that if I have a brand new fleshik pot, I have a brand new pot that I never used ever before, and I only used it to cook 3 meatballs. So then I know that the amount of tam of busser that's contained within this pot is the most amount of tam of busser that's contained within this pot is 3 meatballs worth of tam. The third suggestion that the Beis Yosef that has for the iter is that it could be that the iter is talking about a case where you have a funny shaped pot where the dimensions work out that you have 60 times the volume of the contents of the pot that over the walls of the pot. Could be. Okay, but either way, that's just a technicality of how does the iter's case get off the ground. Now, So again, though, the iter is basically saying when I have a kli cheres, it's possible that if I use this kli cheres, this fleshig pot that I just used a few hours ago to cook meatballs, and now I'm using it a few hours later to cook milchiks, that's possible that now the pot is not treif, and I can use this pot in the future to cook either milchiks or fleshigs. So the big question is what's the hesber for the iter? So the Beis Yosef quotes the Ma'arib ibn Habib, who explains that what the iter is suggesting here is that Hagalah doesn't depend on any particular liquid medium. That the same way that water is, that I can use boiling, scalding hot water in order to accomplish Hagalah, because that scalding hot water, the idea is that the boiling hot water soaks out, pulls out all the tam from my pot, and because the pot is so busy spitting out tam, it's not going to absorb any tam back from that water. So similarly, I can use milk, or I can use a milchik soup in order to do Hagalah. And so if I boil up soup, milchik soup, in this fleshik pot, it's going to soak out every ounce of tam, of basar from this pot. And as long as I throw out all the chicken soup, all the milchik soup, so I'll throw out all the tam that was ever in this pot. And now this pot can be used it's like it's a brand new pot, and I can use this for either milchiks or for fleshiks. That's what the Ma'arib ibn Habib suggests for the hesber, for the iter shita. Now, the Rabbeinu Peretz, as the Torah quotes, disagrees with this whole idea. And the Rabbeinu Peretz says that even if I have a pot that's an Einam ben Yomo, if I have a fleshik pot that's an Einam ben Yomo, and I use it to cook milchiks, so the pot cannot be used for milchiks, and the pot cannot be used for fleshiks. You can't use it for anything. If it's a metal pot, until you do Hagalah, you can't use this for milchiks or for fleshiks. Can you use it for parv? So the Rabbeinu Peretz quotes from the Rivash, that the Rivash has a tshuva where he says that, yeah, you can use this for parv. You can use this for boiling vegetables or for boiling noodles or something like that. But you can't use this pot, which contains tam of chalav in it, you can't use it to cook fleshiks. And you can't use this pot, which contains tam of basr in it, to cook milchiks, until you do Hagalah. If you're dealing with a kli cheres, so the Rabbeinu Peretz says, well, that's irreparable, and you wouldn't be able to do anything with that pot anymore. And you'd essentially have to throw it out. So far, what we've discussed is, the first thing that the Torah tells us is that if I have a fleshik pot, I can't use it for milchiks. If I did use it for milchiks, what's then? So the first shita that we have is based on the Rush, that if it's a ben yomo, I can't, then that will leave everything astray. If it's an ena ben yomo, then the contents of the pot, the tafshul, would be kosher. The pot might be a problem. Then we have the shita of the iter. The iter tells us that if I have a kli cheres and I use this pot, a flesh of kli cheres, and it's a ben yomo, and if there's 60 parts of tafshul against the pot, so then I have 3 shitos. I have either that the tafshul is fine and the pot can be used for milchiks, a second shita that the cheres has to be discarded, and the third shita, the itzer's own shita, and that is that you can use this pot for whatever you want. The Torah then quotes the Rabbeinu Peretz, who says that that even if I have a pot that's an Einam ben Yomo and it's a Fleshik Einam ben Yomo pot, I can't use that. And if I use it for milchiks now, then I can't use this pot for milchiks or for Fleshiks in the future until I do Hagalah, if it's a metal kli, and if it's cheres, then I'm going to have to discard it. Now, one more important sheet, and that is the sheet of the Rashba. The Rashba tells us, if I have a Fleshik pot that I use to cook meatballs, and then, a few hours later, I use the very same pot in order to cook up vegetables, to boil up a pot of vegetables, or to boil up a pot of noodles, a parv dish. So then I can go ahead and I can use this pot a few hours later in order to cook a milchig soup. So where's the Rashba coming from? So the idea behind the Rashba is rooted in the Gemara Avodah Zarah. The Gemara Avodah Zarah, Ein Hamad Beis, Ein Vav Amud Aleph, that same Gemara that we've been discussing so far, discusses how do you kasher various kinds of kelim. So one of the kinds of kelim that the Mishnah over there discusses is how do you kasher a spit? I use a spit in order to roast an animal on an open fire. So how do I kasher that spit? So the halacha is kabol kach potel. So you have to kasher the spit in the same way that the tam was embedded into this kli. And so, in this case, I used an open fire in order to get the tam into the kli, so I have to use an open fire in order to get the tam out of the kli. And so, therefore, I would have to do libun on this spit in order to kasher it. So the Gemara asks, well, I don't understand. There's a braisa that discusses kachim, that for kachim we know that we don't want tam of kachim sticking around within the spit that I use to cook kachim. And if I do have a spit that I used for kachim and I leave it around for a couple days, it has now tam of kachim that's in it, and that tam of kachim is going to be noser, which is aser, of course. So we don't want tam of noser hanging around. So the braisa says, how do you kasher a spit that was used for kachim? So the braisa says you have to do hagalah. So the Gemara asks, well, I don't understand. So isn't there a steer over here? The braisa on the one hand over here, the mission over here in Avodah Zarah is telling us that the way to kasher a spit is to do libun. And on the other hand, the braisa with respect to kachim tells us that the way that you kasher a spit used for kachim, for cooking kachim, is by doing hagalah. So the Gemara has a whole back and forth, different suggestions for how to resolve the stira. Ultimately, the Gemara says, the Rava comes along and says, well, for kachim, the story is a little bit different. Because kol yom nasa giol lachavero. Each day, if I use this same spit multiple times for multiple kachim, so each time that I use it for kachim, it accomplishes a sort of hagala. Now, the question is, what exactly does that mean? So the Rashba explains that what the Gemara is suggesting is as follows. That for kachim, in order for iser to take effect on kachim, in order for kachim to become noser, I have to have full-fledged, bona fide, genuine, undiluted kachim, tam of kachim. And so therefore, if I have a spit that I used for kachim, and I used it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for that kachim, so now that spit contains tam of kachim. And if I would leave this spit out for a few days without using it, this spit would contain tam of noser in it. However, if before I leave it out for a while, I use this spit again to cook other kachim, so what that means is that the tam, the blios from the original kachim that I use it for, are now going to undergo a cooking. And if they undergo bishul, then that bishul accomplishes a sort of hagala. And that hagala waters down, it dilutes the tam of kachim from the previous usage. And therefore, if I water down that tam of kachim, if I dilute that tam of kachim, if I weaken that tam of kachim, it no longer can become noser. That's the Rashba's big chiddush. That's the Rashba's big understanding in the Gemara Avodah Zarah. And therefore, that's what it means. Kol yom nasa giol lachaver. What that means is that each time, if I use this spit again before it becomes noser, then that heter that's contained within this spit will be diluted, will be watered down, and therefore it's impossible for it ever to become noser. And the Rashba says a similar idea. We say bavas v'chalav when we talk about nap or nat. The same thing for dagam sha'alu b'ka'ara, that the Gemara talks about if I have fish that I took off the piping hot coals and I put it onto a fleshic plate. So now the Gemara says I can eat that fish together with cream, with milchaga kutach, with milchaga cream. So the question is, how can I do that? Doesn't the milchaga cream come into contact with blios of butter that are now contained within the fish? So the Rashba understands that the reason that's okay, the reason that nat bar nat is okay, is that the time of butter has been so watered down that by the time that it meets up with chalav, it's not going to be a problem. Because butter with chalav is a problem only if I have fresh, strong tam of basr that mixes up with fresh, strong tam of chalav, then I'm going to have a problem of basr v'chalav. So the basr v'chalav doesn't take effect on something, on watered down, diluted, weakened tam of basr that meets up with chalav. However, when it comes to isr, though, says the Rashba, once isr becomes isr, once I have a piece of nevela, there's no such thing as watering down isr so that it no longer has its effect. Isr is always isr, even if you water it down. But that's exactly how the Rashba. So therefore, in light of this, the Rashba says, so if I have a fleshic pot that I used for cooking meatballs at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and then a few hours later, I boil up noodles in this pot, so that waters down the flavor that's contained within this pot. And if that waters down the flavor, that as far as we're concerned, the basar flavor that's contained within the pot is halachically insignificant, and therefore, I can go ahead and use this pot for cooking milchiks afterwards. That's the Rajba's understanding. Now, the Beis Yosef wants to understand, would the Rajba agree to the Itter that it's not just water, it's not just cooking up vegetables in this pot that would water down the time of basar, but even if I use milk in this pot, let's say I use this fleshik pot to boil up a pot of milk, would that water down the fleshik time that's contained within the walls of the kli in order to accomplish like this kind of hagalah to dilute the time of basar? So the Beis Yosef is inclined to think that the Rajba would agree to the Itter. The only problem is that if you think that the Rajba agrees to the Itter, to the Itter's idea, so then the question becomes, why is it that the Torah challenged the Itter? The Torah outright challenges the Itter, and he says, I don't understand how the Itter could say such a thing. How is it possible that this milk that I boiled up in this flesh of kapad, how is it possible that to that accomplished even more than Hagolah can? Hagolah can extract all the time from a Flis Aris. So why is it that the Torah challenges the Itter but doesn't challenge the Rajba? So the Beis Yosef suggests, he gives a number of attempted suggestions, but ultimately the Beis Yosef suggests it could be that there's a difference between what the Itter is talking about and what the Rajba is talking about. It could be that the Rajba is not talking about Kli Cheres. It could be that the Rajba is saying that outside of Kli Cheres has a high saturation of time in it, and therefore it's very hard to water down, to dilute that time by cooking something in that pot. Now, Shain Kane, the Rajba is talking about if you're using something like a metal kli, so then it's possible to dilute the time of basa that's contained within that pot. That's what the Beis Yosef suggests. Now, the Beis Yosef then goes on though to quote the Rabbeinu Yeruchim. The Rabbeinu Yeruchim seems to understand as a davar pashat that the Rajba disagrees with the Itter. That the Rajba, when the Rajba says that you can boil up vegetables in this flesh of a pot, and that boiling up of the vegetables will dilute the time of basar, that's only if you're boiling up water in that pot. If you're boiling up water in that pot, even if there are vegetables in there, whatever, but it's specifically that kind of thing. But if you used milk in order to accomplish a sort of a gala, the Rajba wouldn't buy into such a thing. Now, why should that be different? So the Beis Yosef has two suggestions for why that should be. Why should it be that the Rajba would say only water could accomplish such a thing, could dilute the time of basar in this pot, but not chalav? So one suggestion is that is an interesting svara, and that is that you're going to tell me that chalav is the very thing that trafes up basar. So you're going to tell me that the very thing that trafes up basar is the thing that can convert this basar into hetter, that to allow this pot to be used for chalav in the future. It can't be such a thing. That's the first suggestion that he says. That the lashon of the Beis Yosef, kiven the chalav hu aser bebasar, eino bedin sheyehe hu agarim hetter. Can't be that this is the thing that's going to result hetter lekederes basar levashu b'chalav, that I can now use this fleshek pot to cook chalav. That's the first suggestion. The second suggestion is just a technical one. It could be that chalav doesn't dilute basar flavor in the same way that water does. That's the second suggestion. Now, do other Rishonim actually hold to this Rajba? Do we pass on like this Rajba? So the Beis Yosef quotes from a number of Rishonim, the Baal Yataisis, the Rush, the Smag, the Sefer HaTshuma, that all disagree with the Rajba. At least within the sheet of the Baal Yataisis and the Rush, they understand that Gemara and Avodah Zarah are totally different. And again, the Rajba's whole Yisoid is rooted in his understanding of the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us that Kol Yom Nasa Gil L'Chaveru, what the Gemara means, according to the Rajba, is that each day that Bishul accomplishes a kind of agala because it waters down the time of Kachin that's contained within that spit. But the Baal HaTosfos understand that Gemara totally different. The Baal HaTosfos understand that what the Gemara really means is that we're dealing with a case of min mimino, that the next day when I use this spit to cook up kachim, so that the old tam from yesterday's kachim is getting mixed up together with today's kachim. And that's a case of min mimino. And so the rules for min mimino when we're dealing with kachim are just the standard doraisa rules. And so for the standard doraisa rules, min mimino is batal barov. That's how the Baal HaTosfos understand that Gemara. Okay, so this is all in terms of what happens if I use a fleshik pot in order to cook milchiks. So we had, for starters, we had the sheet of the rush. We said that if it depends if the pot is a ben yomo or if it's not a ben yomo. We had the sheet of the itter, that even for a klicheris, the itter is willing to be mekel. We had the tor, who was not a fan of the itter's pshat. We had the Rabbeinu Peretz. We had the Rabbeinu Peretz, who says that even if a fleshic pot is an ein ben yomo, you can't use that pot. Once you use it for milchigs, you can't use it for fleshics or for milchigs until you do hagal. If it's metal or if it's a chayish, you're going to have to throw it out. And then we had the Rashba's big chiddush, that if I dilute the tam of basar contained within the walls of a pot by boiling up noodles or vegetables in this pot, so then I can use this pot afterwards for milchigs. Okay, that's in terms of using a fleshic pot for milchigs. But then we have a big topic that comes up in the Dark Emotion. That is, what happens if I use a fleshic pot cover in order to cover a milchic pot? So, if I have a kisoy from a fleshic pot that's an eino ben yomo, what would be the din? Would you say that the kisoy that's an eino ben yomo should be no different than a fleshic pot that's an eino ben yomo? And therefore, why should that affect things adversely, at least the tafshel, why should that chafe things up? So the Dark Moshe quotes on the Agosha Idura a very big chumrah. The Agosha Idura tells us that if I have a fleshig pot cover that I put on top of a milchig pot, everything becomes treif. Even if the kisoy is an ein ben yomo, even if it's no santam of gam, it doesn't make a difference. Why? The Hagosha Dura is an interesting lumdus that he says that somehow the resichos from that milchig soup, let's say, that I'm cooking this milchig pot with a fleshig pot cover, that's an ein ben yomo pot cover, it doesn't make a difference that it's an ein ben yomo pot cover, because somehow the resichos, some of the boiling and the steam from that soup rises up and converts that pot cover to be a ben yomo pot cover. The Derek Moshe says, I see that many Rabbanim passed in that way. I see that the prevalent minig is that way. However, I totally disagree with this. I think that this prat is totally incorrect. And he gives a number of reasons why he thinks that the prat is incorrect. And Lehalacha, the Derek Moshe says, Lekach omer ani, tamek alo hefset vahamachmir, tavo alav bracha. Now, he says that that's only for your own things. And what the Ramah goes on to say is that if you're in a place where the minig is to be machmir, so then of course you shouldn't deviate from the minig. However, if you have any sniff lahakel, then of course you should go ahead and be makel. I totally disagree with this minig. I think that the minig is a minig toss. And if you take a look in the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah has similar lashanis. The Ramah writes in Sadi Gimel Aleph, the Ramah writes, "V'din kisur kedera, kedin kedera atzma." We treat the pot cover just like the pot itself. V'yesh ma'achimimirim, but then there are those who are machmir b'kisur lomer da'afu b'sheinu ben yomo. Even if it's not a ben yomo, dino kihu ki'ilu hayu ben yomo. It says though it is a ben yomo. In other words, the Ramah presents the sheet of the Shari Dura. V'chein noagin b'ktsas makomos. That's what the minig is in a few places. V'chein ani noag mipnei haminig, and that's how I know because of the minig, and that's the Ramah l'shitasi, because Ramah holds that the only reason you'd ever have to be machmer is if the minig of the makom is that place. V'hu chumra b'lo tam, but this is a chumra without a tam, and the Ramah therefore says mikom makom b'makom shi'esh shum tzad lahatir, if you have any sniff lahakel, o shuhu l'tzarek Shabbos or hefsid, or if there's a hefsid at stake, or if it's l'tzarek Shabbos, then yesh lahatir, no problem, you can be makel. Okay, that's the first major halacha from the Dark Emosha. The next major halacha is what happens if I have a hot fleshik pot. Let's say I'm cooking a pot of meatballs on one burner, and I take the pot off that pot of meatballs, this piping hot pot cover, and I take it and I now use it to cover a milchig soup that I want to make. So what's the halacha? So this Yevatar Ha'arach says that there's two potential issues on the table that we have to discuss. The first one is does the milchig pot become treif because the kisoy, this fleshig pot cover that I was just using a moment ago to cover my meatballs, so it could be that that has some liquid on it, and that will be deposited on the milchig pot, and if it's deposited on the milchig pot, that'll treif up the milchig pot. That's issue number one, potential issue number one, and potential issue number two is that the liquid that's contained within this, that's on this kisoy, might drip down into the milchig soup that I'm making right now, and that could be a problem. So the Issur Vetar Aruch says that neither of these things is an issue. First of all, if you want to tell me that the kisoy has liquid on it from when it was sitting on top of the meatballs, so at most what you're dealing with is a klisheni. This wouldn't be like Irei Kli Rishon. This wouldn't be like I'm pouring from a Kli Rishon onto a Milcha Kapat. At most, what I'm dealing with is that the Kisoy itself is like a Kli Sheni, and therefore there's no problem. This Kisoy would not trafe up the Milcha Kapat. Now, what about in terms of little liquid droplets falling down from this Kisoy onto my Milcha Kasup? That's also not a problem, says the Isser Vayetar Arach. The Isser Vayetar Arach says that wouldn't be a problem because we assume that it's such a negligible amount of tipos that are sitting there on top of the geyser that's not going to affect anything. Now, this, of course, is only if you know that the milchuk soup didn't come to boil. If the milchuk soup came to a boil, then, of course, you'd have a totally different situation in your hands because the boiling, of course, would move around the tam from that kisoy all over. But if you manage to take off the pot cover before the milchuk soup began to boil, then everything will be kosher according to the Isser Vayetar Arach. However, the Agosh Haidura disagrees with the Isser Vayetar Arach on both accounts. The Agosh Haidura says, in terms of the first point that you're telling me that we have to be nervous that maybe the kisoy itself had some liquid on it, and that liquid trafes up the pot. That's true. It does trave off the pot. Why? Because why should this be any different? If I had a boiling hot tipa, let's say I had some boiling hot meatball sauce that splattered out of my meatball pot and hit my cold milchuk pot, that would trave off the milchuk pot. So this is really no different than that case. Now, what about the rest? What about the tafshil that's contained within this milchuk pot? What about the milchuk soup that I'm trying to cook? Do I have to be nervous that droplets from the kisoy made its way down and dripped down into my milchuk soup? So the Agosh Haidura says that, yeah, you would. And unless you know definitively that no droplets made their way down to trafe up your pot, then you'd have a problem in your hands. That's why the Ramah says that this would be totally on the idea that if you have to shave off, if you have to skim off a kerei klipa's worth from the soup as well. So the Ramah says, so who am I going to pass on like this? So Ramah says, in terms of the first issue, whether the liquid on that kisoy is going to trafe up your milchuk pat, so the Ramah says, I'm inclined towards the Isser Vayetar Arach. What the Isser Vayetar Arach seems to be much more compelling than what the Agosh Haidura is telling you. Secondly, in terms of the second issue, does the liquid on the kisoy trafe up the contents of your milchuk pot that you're trying to make a milchuk soup? Does it trafe up that pot? Trafe up the tafshil in this milchuk pot? So the Darkei Moshe says that I think that the Agosh Haidura's argument is a little bit more compelling in this case because you have to make sure that droplets of meatballs, right? The droplets from when the top of this pot was sitting on top of the meatball pot, so I have to make sure that I don't have a significant amount of time that's dripping down into my milk soup. That's true. You have to make sure of that. And in fact, if you take a look in the Ramah, in Sadi Gimel, the Ramah tells us that's more or less how the Ramah paskins. He says, if you take a boiling hot kisoy from a fleshik pot, from a meatball pot, and I put it on top of a milk pot, so if they're both hot, then everything is going to be trafe. But if I take the kisoy, if I take a cold kisoy, but we're not going to talk about that, if I take a hot kisoy, if I take a boiling hot kisoy from my fleshik pot and I put it into a cold pot, the Ramah says, Hakol Shari, Rak HaMachol Tarach Klipa, just you may have to make sure to skim off from the Michael. But otherwise everything is going to be mutter. Okay, that's the second major case from the Ramah in terms of if I use the hot fleshik pot cover in order to cover a milchuk soup. The next case that the Ramah discusses is what happens if I use a cold fleshik pot top to a pot, the pot cover, in order to cover a hot milchuk soup. So again, the Ramah says a similar idea that as long as I made sure to take the cover off before the soup boils and builds up steam, then everything will still be kosher. So again, if I use a cold fleshik pot cover in order to cover a hot milchuk soup, as long as I make sure to take off the pot cover before the milchuk soup comes to a boil and builds up steam, then I'm going to be okay. And that's, in fact, if you take a look at the Ramah, in Tzadik Gimel, that's how we paskin. Okay, that's Simon Tzadik Gimel.